Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Joseph Finder, who is out with his brand new Nick Heller novel. It is House on Fire. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold. Joseph, you have satisfied the reader's appetites now. I know that when Judgment was released last year, people were asking you, when's the next Nick Heller? When's the next Nick Heller? And you kept saying you're working on it. It's here. Is this one of those things where, fine, it's here. I've got it done. Take it.
It's true. I've asked that so often. When is the next Nick Heller going to come out? And I've been alternating standalones with the Nick Hellers. But, you know, I really love going back to the Nick books. I love the guy's voice and his personality, and I sort of love inhabiting that for a novel. So I was glad to go back to it.
Well, this one is Nick. Well, he's, of course, the private spy in the Boston area. He's a private spy for hire, and he's trying to infiltrate this wealthy family. They own a pharmaceutical company that produces a drug called oxycodone. You can imagine what that does. But Nick gets involved in this sort of just by happenstance. Can you kind of explain what got his involvement with this wealthy family in the first place?
Yeah, Nick gets some really bad news that a friend of his from the Special Forces, when they served together in Afghanistan, a guy who saved his life, is dead, and from an overdose of opioids. And Nick is at the funeral, and he is approached by a woman who wants to hire him, and she turns out to be the daughter of a very wealthy man who got rich off of opioids. And she wants to become a whistleblower. She wants Nick to dig up dirt on how the family knew how addictive opioids were, but hid it while selling it. So he's motivated to, he says yes right away, because he is just angry about what happened to his friend Sean, and wanting to do something to sort of set things right.
So Nick gets involved in this, and I've seen this in different characters in literature and in real life. People who come back from serving overseas, special forces, military, whatever it happens to be, and they're motivated by, sometimes it's a sense of desire to right things that they see they did wrong. Nick's motivated by money. Is that his only motivation, though, throughout his career?
No, Nick is not motivated. Generally, you know, he's in business, so he's got to make a living. But he's not really, he turns cases away when he doesn't like them. He basically will take cases when he feels strongly about them. They don't always come his way. But in this case, a case comes along that really involves him personally, because it involves the guy who saved his life. So he's deeply motivated. And I find that motivation, that kind of desire for vengeance, is really powerful. It really can propel the story.
One thing I noticed about Nick here, and maybe this happened with your research for the book too, is that it kind of took on a case of like a private of a investigative journalist when Nick is trying to learn about this company that sells this drug. He's looking for documents. He's trying to dig that out. I kind of felt your investigative journalist history coming through on the pages.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's how I started up. That's how I got into this business, really, was writing a book of investigative journalism. And there's a similarity, really, between private investigators and investigative journalists. They're all trying to dig up dirt, and they in many ways use similar techniques, similar instruments to dig that dirt up. So Nick is sort of acting as an investigative journalist, and I felt very at home in those scenes.
And then I can tell Agatha Christie means something to you, because not only was Agatha Christie's work mentioned in the book, at least tangentially, but it seemed that type of Agatha Christie, you've got a home setting where a major scene happens here, and it's kind of a closed universe for a period of time.
Exactly right. And I didn't know it was going to work out that way. You know, I only outline the first maybe 25% of the book, and the rest I sort of wing it. And I found myself starting the main part of the story at this rich guy's house outside of New York. And then I realized I was going to end that story there. And it was in many ways like a sealed room, like an Agatha Christie story in which all the suspects are there in this one country house, and one of them did it, and the detective has to figure out who it is. So it turned out to be a kind of an Agatha Christie moment in this book as well. And, you know, I love the old Agatha Christie stories. I love the new movie Knives Out, which is sort of an ode to Agatha Christie. And I decided that would work in a Nick Heller story as well.
Something I do when I read books is I try to compare things in books to things I've seen elsewhere in different characters throughout media. And Get Smart, Maxwell Smart, always comes to mind when I read Nick Heller, because he has this Nick Heller has this bag of toys that reminds me of the old Get Smart show. They're more modern toys than we. I mean, it's not we're not talking shoot phones here or things, but you've got a Hall Pass, a Boss Cloner, a Bush Bunny.
Yep.
Those have just got to be fun little toys to come up with, unless they maybe exist somewhere.
Here's the thing: they're all real.
Oh God,
these are all real. These toys. I mean, so I basically do a lot of research and I spend time talking to hackers. I'm not very sophisticated at computers, frankly, but some of these hackers really have access to instruments that you wouldn't believe the things they can do with it. So Nick Heller basically either has them or hires someone who can use some of these toys. But no, they're all these toys that I mentioned, Boss Cloner and Hall Pass and all that, they are real.
And they're effective toys, too, because for the private spy industry, how big of an industry is the private spy industry in real life? Because this Nick Heller is a character.
Yeah. Well, I don't know exactly how big the industry is, and there are a lot of private investigators. But I call him a private spy because he's not just an investigator. He's also doing intelligence work. You know, Nick has a background in intelligence espionage work, and he's doing that for private individuals now. So he's acting more like a spy who might work for the CIA, for example, than a gumshoe, for example.
Something else that came out about Nick in this book is, and I'm not going to give it away, but his family connections. We deal with the nephew, his father, and it seems like that more humanizes him because he seems like this superhuman guy. He can get out of physical situations, but realistically, he's a very sensitive guy when it comes to his family, very protective, right?
Yeah, exactly right. And there is a much softer side to him that comes out in his dealings with his family and his dealings with his friend Sean's son, for example. Nick doesn't have any kids, but he has sort of surrogate kids. And I sort of went deeper in this book into Nick Heller's background and his psychology. He's not superhuman. He's got a lot of flaws, and some of these flaws come out in the book, and I thought it was actually an interesting way to humanize him.
There was a Jeopardy moment for me in this book, and I love these things. You mentioned in there that Motorola, this is a complete side note to the actual story, but that Motorola started out making car radios, but their business had to change, and now they make computer chips and cell phones. That had to be something you read someplace and said, I'm going to throw that in a book somewhere at some point.
Yes, exactly right. Because I always wondered, where did the name Motorola come from? Motorola. And when I heard that they started out making car radios, all of a sudden it made sense. And I thought, it's really interesting the way some of these big corporations evolve. They start out doing one thing. Like IBM used to make big supercomputers. And now they're a service industry, you know? And basically a lot of companies have to evolve in order to stay alive. And that's a lesson that sort of figures in House on Fire, that there are companies that change and the company, the opioid company, at the center of the story is trying to get out of the opioid business and hide their assets at the same time. So Nick has to use this corporate history as a way to make sense of what's going on in his sort of quest for vengeance that takes place in House on Fire.
there's been so many books written lately, fiction books, that deal with the opioid crisis, but yours does it in such a different way. It's from the corporate side and not the street level side and, you know, the person dying. So when you look at the opioid crisis, though, how gut-wrenching is the research on something like that? Because we're seeing it not only with people that are, you know, just civilians, but we're seeing it with veterans as well.
Yep, that's right. A lot of veterans were prescribed opioids to deal with a lot of pain and with injuries, and they never were told how to get off of them. So they're basically told how to get on opioids and not told how to get off of them. And I read a number of very good books about the opioid crisis, and that made me angry that doctors were prescribing this stuff not knowing how addictive it was, and how some of these companies that make opioids were concealing how addictive it was. And that, when Nick finds that out and finds out that he can prove the company knew how addictive this drug was and buried it, that really powers Nick through the story.
And his friend who died at the beginning of the book had something called Breacher Syndrome. It was due to repeated exposure to these low-level blasts, traumatic brain injury. Is this sort of the military version of CTE?
Yeah. Very similar to that. These guys who basically blow down doors and do controlled explosions and detonations during wartime, they've found over the years that these people get, you know, it affects their brain, and we didn't know about this for a long time. In fact, I talked to some guys in the Special Forces, and they didn't know about Breacher Syndrome. It's sort of a new, fairly new discovery.
Now, thinking about Nick Heller in Boston, if he was in real life, how good would he be at stealing catcher's signs, figuring out a way for Boston to do this a little bit more off the radar?
That's a low blow.
I'm just trying to bring characters to real life, but you know, Alex Cora was dismissed for the Houston stuff. But I know you're a Boston fan, and I like the Red Sox too. But I mean, let's face it, that would be a job perfect for Nick Heller, wouldn't it? He'd have a whole system set up that nobody'd ever find.
That's right, but he wouldn't get caught.
Yeah, exactly. All right, the book is House on Fire. It's the it's the latest Nick Heller novel from the great New York Times bestselling author Joseph Finder. Joseph, just another great thriller here, and it's so fun to see Nick Heller back, and I know it satisfies a lot of your fans, so thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you so much.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.